This is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 76, recorded Thursday, July 30th, 2009. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: the real benefits of being super elite and instant vacations. Coming to you today from the Washington Marriott in downtown Washington, D.C. Been doing some easy travel since we last spoke. Tulsa, New York, St. Louis, and now Washington, D.C. But the month since the last podcast has really been dominated by a two-week trip back down to Johannesburg, South Africa. 17 and a half hours each way to and from, this time flying out of Washington Dulles on South Africa Airways again, but still with that lovely intermediate stop in Dakar, Senegal. It's a long flight and sort of tough to pop home for the weekend. I'll probably end up heading back down at the end of August, and I think I'll try Delta's direct service from Atlanta to Joburg. Delta's 777, I guess, can make it to and from in one hop, skipping the need for the midnight wake-up call in Dakar. And you know, if that stopover in Dakar was just a touch and go, it might not be a huge hassle. But it is more than that. Of course, you've got to wake up after maybe sort of 3 hours of sleep. But then, after the Dakar-bound passengers deplaned, we had to take out all of our carry-on items out of the overhead bins so security could visually inspect the bins for any left luggage. Then there was a passenger count. The guy next to me had walked down a couple rows to talk to his buddy, and the security folks started drilling me on his whereabouts. Where is he? Who is he? You know, I don't know. You can walk down two more rows and ask him yourself. And then, of course, there's the lovely insecticide spray. So right before departure, flight attendants walk down each aisle, a can in each hand, tops popped. So they're, you know, spraying the entire contents of what they assure you is a World Health Organization approved insecticide. And so there's, you know, they walk down the aisles sort of trailing this cloud of insecticide, on each side. I'll tell you, the eye shades in business class amenities kit, you know, that's when they really come in handy to be able to cover your mouth. So, no stop in Dakar on Delta, no spray down. You know, probably the bigger issue, though, for me is South African Airways' ban on using any smartphones in flight, even when you put them in flight or airplane mode. So unlike any other airline that I fly, I can't use my iPhone as an iPod or even a calculator, even the calculator function, while I'm in the air. I mean, 17 and a half hours without listening to my music, my podcasts, looking at videos. Are you kidding? No, apparently they're not. And on my last flight down, while I was using the calculator on my iPhone to quickly check the math on an invoice, I didn't notice that the flight attendant was sort of, you know, hiding behind the headrest, spying over my shoulder. I didn't notice that is until he swooped down on me, pulled out the in-flight magazine, and loudly pointed out that I was violating the airline's regulations. Fine, I told him. Look, I pointed out that, you know, SAA is the only airline with that rule. I mean, in United's upgraded 767s, they'll sell you a cord that you can patch your iPhone into the entertainment system so you can watch your video on that 20-something inch flat screen. But look, I wasn't going to argue. I didn't want to get arrested when I got off the plane in Joburg. However, I did tell them that this would be the last ticket I buy from South Africa Airways. With that, his tone quickly softened, but I'll tell you, the damage was already done. Look, you can have an attitude, or you can have my money, but you can't have both. Unless, of course, you're the U.S. Congress. We'll be right back. following up, in the Why Can't I Fly Unplugged topic on the last episode of the Travel Commons podcast, I did a bit of a riff, but not a rant, on the Gogo in-flight Wi-Fi service that's being rolled out by Virgin America, AirTran, and American Airlines. Now, some folks will like it, and other troglodytes like me, however, will want to continue to enjoy the electronic isolation that plane flights provide. I participated last Sunday in the Travel Bloggers Exchange in Chicago, where Gogo was one of the sponsors, and I met a very nice marketing rep, very nice woman from there. Actually, Gogo is from Itasca, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. That's where they're headquartered. And like I said, very nice marketing rep. They even provided a 50% off code that's good till the end of August. I actually Twittered that. I sent that out on the Twitter feed on Sunday, but I'll also put the code in the show notes. I mean, really nice folks. I'm sure it's a good service. I'm also sure that I won't be using it in the near future. Now, one of the one of the good things, though, that the Gogo rep told me is that they're blocking Skype traffic, for which I applaud them. It's bad enough having to listen to the guy sitting at right at my shoulder yap away during the 20-minute boarding process to either his wife or his doctor about a flare-up of his irritable bowel syndrome. This is no joke. This happened to me. I forget which flight, but it was sometime this past month. It was incredible. So you can put yourself in that zen zone for 20 minutes and try and sort of block it out when they're sitting right at your shoulder. Not even the Bose noise canceling headsets help. But you know what? I just couldn't take anything like that on, say, a 4-hour flight to San Francisco or LA. Now, I've become actually a big Skype user on these extended trips to South Africa. I bought a webcam for my ThinkPad and put one on my wife's PC in the family room. And every night around 10 p.m. Joburg time, which ends up being about 3 p.m. Chicago time, I'd have a 30-minute video chat with the family. And it worked out well. I mean, the kids, sometimes the cat would sort of drift in and out of the picture. And because it wasn't just one-on-one, sort of, the usual talk to one kid, then pass the phone to the next, I mean, it was a bit more of a family conversation, sort of using Skype to extend the family room sort of some 9,000 miles. I mean, it definitely made the two-week separation a good bit easier. I also used Skype, the Skype app for the iPhone while I was in South Africa. And, though there are some mixed reviews in the App Store, it worked out fine for me. I was drinking a Hansa beer in the Joburg Airport bar waiting for my flight home, and I managed to log my iPhone into a Wi-Fi network at the airport. And sort of on a whim, I flipped over to the Skype app and saw that my wife was logged into her PC. I hit the call button and, really nailed up a nice, clear connection. It was nice to have a quick chat with home for free before hopping on that 17.5-hour flight back. One last South Africa observation, and then I'll move on. In the line arriving in Joburg, I was surprised that when I hit the front of that line in passport control, I was stopped and told to take off my glasses. And looking ahead, I saw a guy pointing something, sort of like a radar gun at me. And it turns out he was doing optical temperature scans of incoming passengers. And I guess, the eyewear screws up the reading. So that was a new one for me. They didn't have that on my last trip to April. My last trip down to South Africa in April, and I haven't seen it anywhere else. I guess concern about swine flu must be growing. It kind of reminded me of a time some years back when there was an outbreak of foot and mouth disease in the UK, and I don't know, maybe in the US, I can't exactly remember, but I was flying at that time. I was flying between Chicago and Toronto for a project, and a lot of the times what I'd do is I'd take the 10 p.m. flight out of Chicago, get into Toronto about midnight, no immigration line, so it was easy to get through, and then I'd have a full day in Toronto with a client the next day. And flying that late in the summer, I'll tell you, I wasn't always sort of dressing up for the flight, maybe sort of slumming in a polo shirt and a pair of shorts and a pair of Teva sandals, until the Canadians started laying out the blue welcome carpet. To prevent the spread of hoof and mouth disease, they had all the arriving passengers, international passengers, walk across a blue carpet soaked in disinfectant. I mean, soaked as in splashing up with every step, which of course made the walk across the carpet in open sandals a lovely experience. I've never worn sandals on a flight again. Now, back in the U.S., on my day trip to St. Louis this past Monday, I was looking out the window of the cab on the way back to the airport, and I saw a warning sticker that I've never seen before. Now, you always see warning stickers telling you to fasten your seatbelt or get out on the curbside of the cab, and recently there have been a spate of gas surcharge stickers. You know, interesting that the gas surcharge is still in place on about 50% of the cabs I take, in spite of the $2 a gallon drop in gas prices. But anyhow, this sticker was unique. Notice, it said in a big red oval, if you throw up or vomit, and now, you know, editorial comment, I didn't know that there was a difference. In my mind, they're the same thing, but there must be some difference according to the sticker. If you throw up or vomit in this taxi cab, there will be a $200 cleanup fee. No exceptions. If you feel sick, tell the driver and he'll pull over for free. Now, this wasn't some hand-lettered sticker. It was nicely printed. I took a snapshot with my iPhone, and I've uploaded it to the Travel Commons Flickr stream, so you know, check the show notes for the direct link. But it was like nicely printed, and it was on both windows. So sort of the cause, sort of the impetus for this notice couldn't have been just sort of a one-off occurrence, and it wasn't just this taxi. I mean, it had to have happened enough times that the taxi cab company felt the need to pay to print up what, you know, I don't know, what, a couple of hundred stickers? It shows some compassion, though, that the driver won't charge you to stop the cab if you can vomit in the street. I don't know, driving a cab in St. Louis, you know, that must be a tough job. Hey, if you've got a question, a story, a comment, the voice of the traveler, send it along. Text or MP3 file if you want to hear your voice on the Travel Commons podcast. The email address is, as always, comment, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or you can send me a Twitter message at mpeacock, or you can post them on the website at travelcommons.com. First topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is real benefits of being super elite. You know, Delta stirred up the frequent flyer world a bit this week by becoming, as my fellow boarding area blogger, the Cranky Flyer, put it, they became the AT&T of the airline industry by allowing the rollover of elite qualifying miles. Now, how does that work? Well, if United offered rollover miles, I'd already be in the bonus round because of my flights to South Africa, which end up being 10,000 qualifying miles a leg. It's about probably, I think that the distance is like around 8,000 miles, and then or 7 or 8,000 miles, and then there's another 2 to 3,000 miles worth of business class bonus. I requalified for 1K status, which is the top tier of United's Mileage Plus program. I requalified on my last flight down to Joburg. So my flight back was gravy, right? And with flights to New York last week and this jaunt to DC this week, I'm at about 115,000 qualifying miles already for 2000 and for 2009, you know, qualifying for status for 2010, which, you know, if you do the math, it's 15,000 more miles than I needed to earn 1K status for 2010. So I'm like I said, I've already qualified, which is the earliest I've requalified for top tier status, which that's just wrong, it seems. But anyhow, you know, what do I do now with these extra 15,000 extra qualifying miles? So if I only needed 100, I'm now at 115. It's only July. I've already got more travel planned So what do I do with the 15,000 extra qualifying miles on United right now? You know, they're kind of wasted because the counter resets to zero on January 1st. But if United matches the Delta rollover plan, then those 15,000 qualifying miles will roll over. So I'd only need, say, 85,000 qualifying miles in 2010 to requalify for top tier in 2011. So why is Delta doing this? Well, I mean, it's simple. It's to keep their most frequent flyers on their planes rather than having them roll off to earn elite status on say another airline. Now, I used to do this very same thing. I'd split my miles between United and American. They both have hubs in Chicago, and I'd split it, you know, say, you know, 50, 60,000 a piece, so that I'd keep mid-tier elite, platinum on American's Advantage program and Premier Exec on United. I keep mid-tier elite on both. And you know, however, once I hit 2 million lifetime miles on American, which then earned me lifetime platinum status. So, no matter if I fly 1,000 miles or, 50,000 miles, I've still got platinum on American. Well, I no longer needed to roll the miles over to American. I didn't need that qualifying anymore. So I doubled down on United and went for their 1K top tier status. And then after 2 years at 1K, United bumped me to their super elite global services. Okay, so there's all the mechanics of it. What do I get for all that flying? I mean, besides walking across the red carpet at boarding time, which you all know I love. Well, at O'Hare, where most of my travel starts, United has a special check-in area for global services customers staffed with very nice gate agents who really want to help you. I mean, they get offended and wave you over if you try to use the self-service kiosks. And then walking out of this sort of, this nice little special place, it puts you right in front of the status security line, so no waiting behind those, those premiers or those first-class passengers. You walk straight to Mr. TSA. So, okay, so that's, sort of 10 to 15 minutes of extra sleep on a Monday morning. It's nice, but it's not a deal closer. Well, here is what the deal closer is. A couple of weeks ago, when I was returning from Joburg, my SAA flight landed at Washington Dulles at 6:25 Saturday morning, so it was about 25 minutes late. So I sweated through a brutal immigration line at Dulles, which, reminds me I never want to go through. I never want to, land internationally at Dulles ever again. Then I end up racing down two concourses, skipped by, didn't stop at the Starbucks, and which for me at early in the morning, that's a big sacrifice. So anyhow, I ended up making my 8 a.m. connection to O'Hare with a couple minutes to spare. And I mean, it was a nice plane. It was one of these, United revamped transatlantic 767s that I talked about earlier with the lie-flat seats and the flat panel TV and business class. So I sit down, settle in, catch my breath as we back out of the gate. And then in the alleyway, the captain runs up the engines once and then again. Yeah. Uh-oh. After about 5 minutes of silence, he comes on the PA. A bleeder valve in one of the engines is stuck, and now we're headed back to the gate for maintenance. I look around, not only in business, and then look back out in coach. The plane's full. This is not good. So I light up my phone while we're taxiing back, call the global services desk. A native English speaker immediately picks up the phone. What are my options, I ask her. Well, she says, there's an 8:44 a.m. I said, nah, I said, I'm not going to make that. I said, it's 8:30 right now. We're still taxiing back to the gate. Well, how about the 10 a.m. she offers? I said, well, can you protect me on that? Yes, absolutely. Got it done. Now, note that not even a travel agent can protect seats anymore. You can only hold one seat. You either got the seat you got, or you got to give it up to be able to take another seat. As a super elite, I didn't have to do that. I got protected. So we're back at the gate, and we're waiting for the infamous maintenance decision. So the captain says, we'll get an update at 9 a.m. I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll hang out till 9 a.m. because if we get the 9 a.m. and then he pushes back, then I'm still going to leave earlier than the 10 a.m. Well, 9 a.m. comes and goes without so much as, the captain keying his mic. 9:15. That's it. I grab my computer. I head for the door. The flight attendants look at me like, where are you going, buddy? Well, I'm leaving for the 10 a.m. flight. Well, you're going to have to talk to the gate agent about this. Just then the gate agent walks up, looks at me, says, Mr. Peacock, I was just coming to get you. This flight isn't leaving for at least another hour. Here's your boarding pass for the 10 a.m. flight. It's a first-class seat. Please, follow me. I wave goodbye to the flight attendants and walk out. And get on the 10 a.m. flight, which gets into O'Hare around 11 a.m. Central. Taxiing to the gate, of course, I light up the iPhone. We've talked about electronic schadenfreude before. I light up the iPhone to see, you know, what's the status of my original flight. Still hasn't left. I get home. My original flight still hasn't left. The 8 a.m. flight finally left D.C. at 12:45 p.m., long after I was home with my family after 2 weeks in South Africa. Now that's the real benefit of being super elite. The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is instant vacations. So, sitting on this 10 a.m. Dulles to O'Hare flight, waiting to get home, I got talking to the front cabin, the first class flight attendants. Their morning was going about as good as mine. They weren't supposed to work this flight. Indeed, they weren't even supposed to be in D.C. The trip that the two flight attendants working in first class had bid on was O'Hare to Dulles to Portland, with a 29-hour layover in Portland. Now, I really like Portland. I think that's a great city, and if I was going to lay over 29 hours, that would absolutely be one of the places I would want to do it, between the food, the beer, the wine, and just the general vibe. It's a great city. And both these flight attendants, they had 20 years seniority, and they got to pick their trips, and that was the trip that they wanted. One of them, I guess, is a photographer, and he'd booked a car and a plan to, I think, run through sort of the forests, they're almost like rainforests outside of Portland over toward the Pacific Ocean, and, was planning to sort of fill up digital storage cards to his life's, to his heart's content. Unfortunately, their O'Hare to Dulles flight had been delayed the day before, and they missed the Portland flight. So then the next day, they were actually supposed to deadhead back to O'Hare, except that the crew that was supposed to work, the O'Hare flight, this 10 a.m. flight, well, they missed their flight. So instead of a 29-hour instant vacation in Portland, these two flight attendants ended up now working the return flight home, not quite the vacation they'd planned. Now, I've talked on a number of past episodes about instant or sort of accidental vacations. The whole idea is, if you have to spend your life on the road, or you end up spending a big chunk of your time in frequent travel, you ought to get a little something for yourself out of it just every once in a while. Now, the photographer flight attendant was trying to do that, and I try to do it at least a couple of times in the winter during ski season. It goes something like this. At least once every 6 weeks or so, I completely lose control of my travel schedule and have to fly across the country, in the week between sort of San Francisco and New York. Indeed, I've actually got one of those trips coming up. It's actually a LA to New York flight a couple of weeks after I get back from vacation. Now, in the winter, I actually use this, I kind of look forward to it, because I use it as an excuse to go skiing. Rather than flying directly from, say, San Francisco to New York, I catch the last flight out of San Francisco for Denver, typically leaves at about, like 5 o'clock. I grab a rental car at DIA and head up to my mother's house in Evergreen, where I have all my ski gear sort of forward positioned. At 6 o'clock the next morning, I hop in the car, drive up to Breckenridge, and just ski the hell out of that mountain till about, 2 p.m. Because, there's no crowds on a Tuesday or a Wednesday. Then I head back down the hill to my mother's, have a late lunch, head back down to DIA, grab the 5 p.m. out of Denver, and I'm in New York and in my hotel by, say, midnight. And rather hating my life, for having to schlep across the country, I'm loving life with a really sore pair of legs. I told this story actually last weekend at the Travel Bloggers Exchange meetup to a couple of folks from Vail Resorts, which in Vail Resorts owns Breckenridge. And Vail Resorts actually was one of the sponsors for the exchange. They absolutely loved the story. One woman, Amy, said to me, she said, you know, when we came out with the Epic Pass, which is in effect this hugely discounted season's pass that gets you unlimited access to Vail, Beaver Creek, Breck, Keystone, A-Basin, and Heavenly Valley. She said, you know, when we came up with the Epic Pass, we wondered if people would do just what you've described. You know, it's you make the payment, it's a fixed cost, and now, you know, you try and maximize the benefit out of it. She said, it's great to hear somebody taking advantage of it. And, you know, that's the whole idea. You know, frequent travel will take a lot from you. Delayed flights, missed dinners, time away from your family, you know, flight attendants peering over your shoulder and scolding you. You know, if you're going to keep pushing yourself to the airport every Monday morning, and I'll tell you, it can be a drag, you need to be able to take a little something for yourself every once in a while. And that's the whole idea behind an instant vacation. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons Podcast number 76. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Better yet, I hope you decide to tell somebody else what a phenomenal time you had over the last 20 minutes, and I hope you refer it to somebody else to subscribe. Anyhow, you know, kind of was pushing the limit here on getting a podcast out in July. I know it's July 30th. Luckily, July has 31 days, so I pushed it just about to the limit, but that's it. You know, that's my life, facing deadlines. And the deadline here is that tomorrow on the 31st, I'm heading out for a week's vacation to Denver and out to Aspen. So I love Colorado in the summertime and looking forward to it. Hey, the bridge music for this podcast is again from our friends at Magnatune.com, the We Are Not Evil label, Bubbly by Ruben Van Rompuy, How Do I Work This by The Cocoon, and Piano Circus by Philip Weigel. As always, you will find links in the show notes to the Magnatune's artists page. Hey, if you have a story, a thought, a comment, a gripe, moans and groans, cries of anguish, the voice of the frequent traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or to MPeacock on Twitter, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who has taken the time to send in emails, tweets, and post comments on the website. And until we speak again in August, happy travels, happy vacations. Thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Take care. Bye now.
Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing can ease my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina.